Welcome to church, everyone. So happy you've joined us today, especially those of you who came back after last week's Easter experience. And the title of my message today is, It's Time to Take Some Risks. Now, I don't know where you fall on the whole riskiness scale, but the truth is, we take risks every day. Those of you maybe who have a fear of flying, it's much more risky, you know, to get in your car and drive to work each day. I didn't say church. You're totally safe driving to church, but shopping or to work or out to eat, whatever, watch out, right? Somebody dies every 16 minutes in an auto-related accident. And staying around your house, it's not much better. Nearly a half a million people each year are injured by kitchen knives. Although I found out that very sharp knives are much safer than dull knives, because with dull knives, you have to work that much harder to get them to cut through stuff, and you're contorting yourself to make it cut. Before you know it, you know, off comes a finger or whatever. The cords and strings attached to mini blinds and draperies, they're pretty dangerous too. A whole bunch of kids and pets die every year from strangulation in those things. So life is filled with everyday risks. But when it comes to our Christian faith, it's going to take some risk to follow Christ. Obeying God is going to take some risk. Either you're going to live with some risk, or you're going to waste your life. And so there's this gravitational pull, you see, toward comfort. It's comfortable to make church a hobby while we pursue our own interests. It's comfortable wasting huge amounts of time on social media or Netflix or YouTube. It's comfortable chasing down mindless pastimes while our life's purpose goes unexplored. And the problem with all of these time wasters is not just doing the thing itself. It's all the important stuff that you're not doing as a result. It's the relationships that you never deepen. It's the people that you never serve. It's the great prayers you never pray. It's the gifts that you never give. It's the skills you never sharpen. The spiritual battles that you never fight. It's the tears you never weep. It's the open doors you never walk through. We were made for something more, something bigger, something better than just a comfortable life. Scientists at Berkeley did a study years ago. They put a little amoeba in an ideal environment. Perfect temperature, perfect humidity, perfect amounts of light and food and water. And that little amoeba had no stress whatsoever, no challenges, no problems at all. And you know what happened to it? It died. Too much comfort is lethal. That's true for us spiritually too. And so we're going to be in Matthew 25 today, starting in verse 14. If you have a Bible or device, I'd encourage you to find your way there. Matthew's the first book of the New Testament. You'll find it about two-thirds of the way through the pages of your Bible. Jesus is going to talk about the value of taking some risks for God as we look into the parable of the talents. And we're in week two of this series called Stories by Jesus. It's about Jesus' parables, and I hope you're taking advantage of our daily reading plan throughout the whole series. We worked hard to put that together for you. But we're looking at these parables, and a parable is simply a story that explains a deeper lesson using everyday objects or ideas. Jesus used parables all the time to share teachings and insights with his followers. It's funny, one time in Matthew 13, his disciples asked Jesus why he spoke to them in parables. And he answered them this. He says, "To you it has been given to know the secrets of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been given." In other words, some people are going to get it and some people aren't. But at their core, Jesus uses parables to describe a new kind of life in the kingdom of God. Now, you and I don't live in a kingdom like they have in other parts of the world. So this is a bit of a foreign concept to us. But the kingdom of God is simply the rule and reign of God. So right now, we live in an invisible kingdom. But one day, it will be visible to everyone. Right now, it means living under the rule and the expectations of a new way of life that's been offered to us by our powerful and benevolent King. It means aligning our dreams and our desires and our allegiances and lifestyles to the ways of the kingdom. And so in his parables, Jesus is giving a glimpse. He's giving those who have eyes to see a glimpse into the realities of this kingdom. And when Jesus came to earth the first time, he established the kingdom on earth in part. But it'll only be established fully when he returns a second time. And then the whole earth will be brought under his authority. And so it's a now and a not yet kind of thing when it comes to the kingdom of God. And we live in the middle. And so in our parable today in Matthew 25, Jesus is instructing us about what we should do while we live in the middle, awaiting our King's ultimate return. What should we be busy doing? So we're going to read it in Matthew 25, starting in verse 14. says, "For it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted to them his property. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, to each according to his ability. And then he went away. He who had received the 5 talents went at once and traded with them, and he made 5 talents more. So also the one who had 2 talents made 2 talents more. But he who had received the 1 talent went and he dug in the ground and he hid his master's money. Now after a long time, the master of those servants came and he settled accounts with them. And he who had received the 5 talents came forward, bringing 5 talents more, saying, 'Master, you delivered to me 5 talents here. I have made 5 talents more.' His master said to him, 'Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master.' And he also asked those who had 2 talents to come forward, saying, 'Master, you delivered to me 2 talents. Here I have made 2 talents more.' And his master said to him, 'Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master.' He also had received the 1 talent came forward, saying, 'Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you scattered no seed. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. And so here, you have what is yours.' But his master answered him, 'You wicked and slothful servant, you knew that I reap where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed. And then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, and at my coming I should have received what was my own with interest. So take the talent from him and give it to him who has the 10 talents. For to everyone who has will more be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away. And cast the worthless servant into the outer darkness, in that place where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth.'" Wow, that went south quick, didn't it? So we have the 2 faithful servants and the 1 evil servant. And each of us is represented by 1 of these 3 servants. The master has left for a while. He's left us in charge of his kingdom until he comes back. And he's transferred his valuable estate to us in the form of talents. In those days, a talent was a form of currency. It's estimated that 1 talent was equivalent to about 15 years' worth of average wages, which means each talent was worth maybe somewhere around $750,000 in modern terms. It's a small fortune that they're being entrusted with. Now, before you get freaked out, rest assured that this isn't a money sermon. I want us to think about talents as any of the God-given abilities and resources that he's entrusted to us. I think this broader definition is what Jesus intended anyway. So if you think of these talents as literally the talents or the skills or the gifts that God has given you, we're going to be in the same ballpark as we go forward. In fact, we have as a core value here at Grace that it parallels this concept. The value is called all in. And it simply states this, that God created us with unique skills to do ministry. And we strongly believe that everyone at Grace is here for a reason. The church doesn't function well unless we're all involved. And so notice the faithful servants in this story. They had something in common. They both took a risk with the master's talents, the 5 and the 2. They invested and they doubled his money. And the wicked servant played it safe and he buried his. And so taking risks is kind of the key theme that gets reinforced in this story. And so I want us to look at 4 reasons to risk going all in with your talents. Okay, here's the first reason. All of your talents come from God. So maybe you've heard the term, you know, playing with house money, or maybe you're actually a Christian and don't use gambling phrases, but let's just go with the gambling term for a minute, okay? You're playing with house money. It means that you have nothing to lose. That the talents that you have, they were not yours to begin with. So the time, the energy, the skills, the personality, the advantages that you enjoy, that all came from God. And so if you're underlining today, would you underline verse 14, that little phrase that says, called his servants and entrusted to them his property. And just write, talents come from God in the margin. They were his property, which means God looked at you and he said, listen, I'm going to give you a bunch of talents. I want you to use them like crazy. I want you to invest them in my kingdom. But don't forget, they're mine. If you're a Christian, the moment you became a Christian, you were endowed with certain spiritual gifts. The Bible's very, very clear on this. And those gifts were given to you to advance God's kingdom and to build his church. And so if you go through our core class, for example, as some of you are doing right now, there's a section of that class that helps you to discover the spiritual gifts that God has given you. But it's very easy to take those gifts and to get grabby with them, to get selfish with them. So, for example, maybe God gave you special abilities in the area of administration. It's easy to say, listen, I'm going to only use these to advance my own career. I'm going to only use these to organize my own household, for example. Or God gave some of you special gifts in the area of arts or music or design. And so often people take that and they say, okay, I'm going to use that to only build my resume or my personal brand. But we must remember that we are the stewards and not the owners of God's good gifts. The master has entrusted them with his stuff. And this mindset, when we understand that it's all his, it reframes how we think about our lives. We have to take those God-given skills and talents and energies and prioritize using them to advance his kingdom. Now, I'm not saying that everyone needs to quit their jobs and just go into full-time ministry. But far too often, just the opposite happens. We never think about using our talents for God. This parable reminds us that we have to go all in with our God-given talents until Christ returns. But you won't be motivated to properly serve God until you know God properly. In other words, you can see in this story that a critical error in the success or failure of these servants was their understanding of the true nature of the master. In verse 24, the wicked servant describes the master. He describes him like this. He says, you're a hard man, and you've gathered where you didn't scatter seeds, right? And some people have wondered, is Jesus, when he tells this parable, is he telling us that that's what God is like? Because frankly, some of you see God like that. You think he's a taskmaster. You think he's a hard-driving, uncompassionate, unfair deity. But it's important to note that Jesus here, as he tells this story, he's not describing the actual character of God. Instead, he's describing the misconception that the evil servant had about the master. And it was his misconception of the master that caused him to be fearful and hesitant about going all in with his talents. And so he buried them. The key was his view of the master. The first two servants, they didn't see the master that way at all. They had a sense that he was good and trustworthy. You can see it as they were awaiting his return eagerly, like a child waiting for his dad to come home. And so guys, our view of God is really important in determining our willingness to go all in. The more you get to know God, for example, the more that you'll want to surrender to him. And so because they knew that the talents were really his and because they trusted that he was good, the good servants had complete freedom and confidence in risking all that they had for him. And so the first reason to risk going all in is because you know that all your talents come from God in the first place, and he's good. Here's the second reason to risk. God knows what you can handle. Look back up at verse 15. The master divided his talents among his servants, each according to his ability, it says. Underline that little phrase and just write, God knows what you can handle. He didn't give equally across the board. He gave each one talents according to their ability. 5, 2, and 1. And that's offensive if you're an everyone gets a participation trophy kind of person these days. But think about it. This just shows wisdom and love and discernment on the part of the master. He's smart. Not everybody's wired the same. Some have more capacity than others. But you need to see this too. There are no zero-talent children of God. Everybody got something. And so if you come along and say, oh man, I have nothing to offer, not true. Everybody shares the wealth when it comes to God's good gifts. But it's also true that he entrusts you with what you can handle. And this truth helps us with both confidence and with comparisons. We should be confident that we can handle it when we get a new assignment from God. God knows that there is great diversity among his servants. He knows that our situations, our stages in life, our personalities, our capacities are all different. And God knows what you can handle, which means if you're a new mom and you're used to accomplishing like 5 talent assignments and you've got a 1 talent kind of opportunity, here's my encouragement. Go all in on that 1 talent. It's not beneath you. Be confident that God knows what you can handle at this stage of things. And if you're a person on the other end of things who's been dragging your feet because, you know, about getting involved because you're apprehensive and you're scared and you feel like you're not an expert of theology maybe quite yet, but God leads you into a 5-talent opportunity, don't just say no. Be confident that God knows what you can handle. Not one of the servants received more or less than he could handle. So you're simply responsible to use well what God has entrusted to you. This also helps us with comparisons, doesn't it? You know, one of the reasons that people don't use their gifts for God is that they feel inadequate because they're constantly comparing themselves to others. Well, if I could sing like Chrissy, or maybe I'd serve, or if I was as friendly as John, or as hospitable as Jeff, or if I could cook like Dan, or teach like Sarah, if I was wise like Dick, or creative like Ellen. See what we do? And we use all that stuff as an excuse not to serve God with what we have. And God looks back at us and says, listen, you're not responsible for anyone else's talents. You're only responsible for the ones that I gave you. And so the issue is not how much you have compared to everyone else. It's how you use what you have. And God knows what you can handle. So you're free to go all in. Okay? Here's the third reason that we can take that risk. Among the risk takers, there are no losers. When I read this story, I've always thought that there was a missing character in the story. Notice that there is no character in here who risks it all and loses it all. And I think that that character is left out of the story intentionally by Jesus, because it's as if he's saying that among the risk takers, there are no losers. The 5 and 2 talent servants, they went at once, it says in verse 16, and they traded and they doubled their money. They took some risks. All you stockbrokers and day traders, this is your life verse right here, okay? They got immediately to work trading shares, and notice the urgency. They did it at once. Remember, the master was gone and they didn't know when he would return, and so they got right after it with urgency. I heard a story one time about a U.S. Army officer who tells a story about his instruction at an artillery training school in Oklahoma. He taught the same exact class in artillery training, same materials, same lectures, same examples. One class he taught in 1958 and one class in 1965, but he couldn't believe the difference between the two classes. In 1958, he couldn't keep students awake. They slept through every lecture. They didn't do their homework. They failed all the tests. But in 1965, with the exact same lectures, the exact same school, the exact same materials, students were glued to his teaching. They were hanging on every word. They were taking meticulous notes. Do you know what the difference was? The second class was in the middle of the Vietnam War. And those students in 1965, they knew that in a few short weeks, they would be staring across a field at people who were trying to kill them. Suddenly, the subject matter took on a whole new sense of urgency. And so for the first two servants, they had this sense of urgency. They took some risks, among the risk takers, there were no losers. Look at verses 21 and 23, where he says to those two servants, "Enter into the joy of your master." Just underline that and write in the margin, "Risking equals winning." It's just the same way of saying it right there. On the other hand, when it comes to obeying God, dragging your feet or playing it safe can be a really dangerous place to be, as we see from the third servant. He apathetically dug a hole and he buried his talent and he covered it up. And if you wonder what motivated him, well, at the end of the story, we find out it was fear. He says, "I was afraid, and so I chose to do nothing with my talent." Notice he wasn't punished for doing bad things with his talent. He was punished for doing nothing. We don't like to think of apathy and inactivity as a really big sin, but this parable makes it seem like it's a really big deal. Another early writing from the second century was discovered that told this same story, tried to kind of improve on Jesus' story. But that version tried to make the third servant's sin a little juicier. And so instead of just saying that he buried his talent, this version said that the third servant squandered his talent on whores and flute players. Now, apparently at the time, those were the two worst categories of people you could come up with. I know our common service in McCain has several flute players, so we got our eyes on you. The point is that we don't think of this guy's sin of inactivity as a very serious sin. It had to be more than that. But guys, spiritual inactivity is a very serious sin because it speaks to our unrealized potential in Christ. The loser in the story is the one unwilling to take the risk to go all in. Because of that, we believe that there are no bleachers at Grace, that there are no sidelines, that there's only the game. And if you call Grace your church home, we expect you to get in the game, take a risk, Get involved. Use your gifts, because among the risk takers, there are no losers. Here's the fourth reason to go all in. You'll be held accountable for how you use your talents. There's a strong sense of personal accountability in this parable. Eternal destinies are on the line. The master comes back and he measures the success of the servants based on the risk that they assumed on his behalf. Two of the servants exhibited boldness, and although the five-talent servant and the two-talent servant yielded different results, Jesus pictures them as equal in their faithfulness. Even though the amounts were different, the risk was equal, and ultimately, the reward was equal as well. You see, the faithful servants understood the life and death nature of the deal, that nothing could be more important than pleasing the master. And so they also understood that when the master returns, there will be life and death consequences for the decisions that they made about that which was entrusted to them. And so he came back and he was pleased. And what could possibly be greater than to reach the end of our days and to have our God say what the master says in this story, "Well done, well done, enter my joy." What a beautiful sound that will be. But not so beautiful for the third servant. Look at verse 30. We underline this. It says, "Cast the worthless servant into the outer darkness." And just write, "accountable for her talents" in the margin. This seems like a harsh punishment. He's essentially sending him to hell just because he failed this one assignment. I mean, you may be thinking, I thought salvation was based on God's grace and God's love, not passing, you know, judgment on a single assignment. Listen, the Bible is clear that we can't accumulate enough works to ever earn our salvation. It's by God's grace alone. But the proof that our heart has been changed by God will begin to flow out of us in our works. Our lives will begin to bear out the fruit of salvation. The very next parable, right after this one, is of the sheep and the goats. And it seems to suggest that our treatment of the poor will be a key factor in separating true believers from non-believers in the final judgment. Jesus also said things over in Matthew 7, like, "Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Thus, you will recognize them by their fruits." Again, the fire is another reference to ultimate judgment and accountability. And the point here is that the activities of your life will reflect the loyalties of your heart, which means faithful servants realize that pleasing the Lord is the primary aim of their life, that nothing could be more important than this. And that when the master returns, there will be life and death consequences for the decisions that they made about their use of the talents that were entrusted to them. Coming to grips with how we use our talents is a really big deal. We need to overcome any fear and take some risks. Because here Jesus is redefining success before our very eyes. Success is not ultimately about money. It's not ultimately about positions. It's not about climbing the corporate ladder or even just being the best that you can be. Success is laying your head on the pillow at night, knowing that you were faithful to do what God asked you to do. That's success. Some of you are like, "Dang, dude, it's only my second week here after visiting on Easter and you're hitting me with all this." Jesus was intense, for sure. He didn't leave a lot of people feeling real comfortable. But I will say that there is a process to this. If you're new to Christianity, spend some time getting to know Christ better. Familiarize yourself with His Word and with His church. Take some baby steps first. The calling thing will come eventually. But let me review before I take us to a next step. We talked about four reasons today to risk going all in with your talents. We said first that all of your talents come from God, that God knows that you can, what you can handle. And our story today was clear that among the risk takers, there are no losers. And finally, the scary one, that you'll be held accountable for how you use your talents. Many of you know in the spirit of this parable that we're taking some big risks as a church, stepping out, trying to increase our capacity for Christ. It was about 5 years ago now in a hotel room in Virginia, late one night, while everyone else in my family was asleep. I was pondering this very passage, and the Lord spoke to me and He said, "Grace Church is a 10-talent church. Guys, He's entrusted us with so much." And you thought there were high expectations with the 2-talent servant or the 5-talent servant. He's made us a 10-talent church. And we're trying to be diligent about taking risks and investing in the future of the kingdom and growing the capacity of what God has given us. And for years, it's like He said, "You know, you've been faithful with a little. I'm going to give you a little bit more." and then a little bit more. And so just last month, we launched our Transform 1-8 vision. And yes, it's ambitious. And what I know is that Jesus didn't die so that we could bury our talents and just live comfortable little lives and have comfortable little fellowship and safe and secure and protected from the outside world. He died so that the gates of hell could be trampled down by his faithful followers, bringing the message of Jesus to those who need hope. He didn't die so that you could live a mediocre life. He didn't die so that you could wake up and go to work and have a bite to eat and watch Netflix and go to sleep and then repeat it all again tomorrow. He died so that you could be mobilized to live out your life's purpose and calling and make a difference in the church and in this world. And so one of the foundational goals of this vision is to help each person at Grace to find your calling. And so here's the next step. I'd ask many of you to take it. We've designed a really great 90-minute experience at each of our sites that will help you to do just that, to find your calling. So I'd encourage you to register for this Find Your Calling event. It's an event for everyone, including actually even our staff and people who are already involved in ministry of some kind, or those of you who are not involved at all. One of our site pastors will be walking you through a guided process of personal reflection and discovery that will help you to put the puzzle pieces together of your calling. There will also be a time at the end to explore different opportunities to serve at our different sites and in our city and in our world. But it's an experience very much focused on you and helping you to discover what God might be calling you to do with your life. There are a few opportunities, and you can come to any of them that suits you. Sunday, April 22nd in Girard, following the second service. In Harbor Creek at 6:30 p.m. on that same night. Or Wednesday, that next Wednesday, April 25th at McCain at 6:30 p.m. Child care is available for all of them. But you can register by texting NEXT to 62953 or by visiting the whoisgrace.com, a website or our app, and you'll find it in the coming events section. But I think it's time for a bunch of us to take some risks when it comes to using the talents that God has entrusted to us. Just throw caution to the wind. Whatever's holding you back or whatever's making you afraid, just don't let it do that anymore. The people of God are supposed to be a force to be reckoned with. You know, Ern McManus used an illustration in his book, The Barbarian Way, that I want to close with today. You know, most groups of animals have a name that's used to describe them when they dwell together. And so the ones you know are things like a school of fish or a herd of cattle or a flock of birds. But some of them get a little crazy and descriptive. So I want to do a little quick quiz as we close today, okay? It's going to get progressively harder. So how about geese? Anybody know the name for a group of geese? Right, it's a gaggle. Anybody know lions? It's a pride of lions. How about crows? I love this one. It's actually a murder of crows. Pretty creepy. Buzzards? It's a committee of buzzards, which explains a lot about things in the church world, okay? Here are some advanced ones. Ready? Anybody know flamingos? It's a flamboyant of flamingos. How about porcupines? A prickle of porcupines. That's a good one. How about hippos? It's called a bloat of hippos. All right? We could do this all day, but there is a point to this. All right, one more. Giraffes. It's a tower of giraffes. Isn't that great? I love the descriptive ones. And on that note, maybe my favorite of all, is the rhinos. Now, before I tell you what it is, you need to know a couple of things about rhinos. One is, rhinos can run 30 miles per hour. That's really fast. Now, by comparison, if you've ever seen a squirrel scampering around your backyard, they only run 26 miles per hour. So rhinos are faster. And actually, if it was a whole group of squirrels, they'd be called a scurry. But again, that's another thing. So rhinos can run 30 miles per hour. Here's the problem. They can only see 30 feet in front of them. So imagine running that fast with no idea what's at 31 feet. Like you'd think they would be far too timid to ever pick up a full head of steam, that their inability to see far enough ahead would paralyze them to complete inactivity. But do you know what their collective name is? I love this. It's called a crash of rhinos. How appropriate. And I think that's the kind of what we're supposed to be, church. We're risk takers. And whatever's at 31 feet needs to better care that we're coming. And they better get out of the way because we're coming. Because you see, the future is uncertain. But we need to move with confidence that there are personal callings to be pursued. There's a vision to be chased down. There's a future to be created. There's a humanity to be liberated. We need to stop wasting our time and stop fearing what we can't see and what we don't know. And we need to move full force ahead into our purpose because we do know the Master. And we do know that He's coming back any minute. And we do know that among the risk takers, everyone wins. God bless you guys.